This is Freedom First, and I'm Jeffrey Tucker. Today I would like to talk to you about corruption and the particular problem of when corruption goes all the way to the top. It's an unusual one, and we need to explore it a little bit by reference to the history of Hollywood. Now, in the post-war period, there were a fantastic number of films that came out about mob corruption, corruption growing out of crime families, and the Prohibition era, and bad things happening all the time. And in the post-war period, there was a sense that it could be rooted out. But we had to know about it. So a lot of films focused on this. And one that I revisited the other day is pretty wonderful. It's called On the Waterfront, with music by Leonard Bernstein. The music is amazing. And starring Marlon Brando, and he is amazing. Well, it tells the story of a longshoreman's union in New Jersey, where the union is just a regular union, except it's been taken over by a small gang of thieves who are charging big union dues and keeping the money for themselves and getting rich from it and allocating out the jobs based on who is loyal to the mob bosses, basically, to the union bosses, and underpaying the workers and punishing anybody who draws attention to any financial irregularities or abuse that's going on. And this goes on for a very long time. And everybody knows the rules. They say, everybody needs to be D&D, meaning deaf and dumb. So don't hear anything, don't say anything, and you're gonna be good. And so only the loyal workers got to work during the day and got a paycheck. If you're disloyal to the union bosses who are robbing everybody, then you would get excluded. As the movie opens, we're greeted with an extreme case of this where they throw a guy off a roof and actually kill him for daring to sing to the crime commission that's recently been formed. Now, the crime commission is looking into union corruption and is looking for people to rat it out, to put an end to it, so the bosses of the union get really panicked and start using extreme methods. Well, this, of course, tips things over. And it's up to Marlon Brando, whose brother is actually one of the top guys in the among the union bosses. And he has to decide between his family loyalties and his loyalties to the truth and to what's right. So through moral courage, he finally stands up, gets into a big fist fight, stands up for truth and justice, and the union boss is overthrown. Now, what's crucial to the story is that you have a crime commission that's there to ferret out this corruption and expose it to the world, and then it gets fixed. That's basically it. Now, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of movies that follow the same plot line, and we like them because it's fun to look at the inner workings of a criminal network, to see how brutal they are towards each other, to discover their nefarious ways, to be glad we're not like them. To look at the strange honor among thieves and the way they try to keep silence and their disregard of morality, the way they just play games with other people's lives and their own financial interests. And it's all kind of grim. But all these plots, especially in this period, all turned on the idea that there's a higher power that is holding to account corrupt institutions. And once they're discovered, we root it out, and the problem gets fixed. And that represented a very interesting sort of post-war confidence in American institutions. If we could only have them discovered, then the courts would clean up things, the cops would clean up things, the FBI would fix matters, and we would gradually get better as a society. We were imperfect, to be sure, and we liked discovering all the ways in which that is true. But we had the institutional mechanisms in place to fix the problem. So my question for you today is whether and to what extent this is still true. Now, the backdrop of this question really does trace to what we discovered after 2016, really 2020, where we see very strange things emanating from the top of the government, the top of big tech, the top of big legacy media, and large corporations. And for all the world, for all our research, it's shown that there was a deep collaboration between all of these institutions to overthrow American rights and liberties, and particularly cooperate together in the censoring of speech. Now, all of this stuff contradicts the Constitution. We have a First Amendment. We have many amendments in the Bill of Rights that guarantee things like freedom of association, freedom of travel. Free enterprise has always been assumed. They can't just shut down your business. Freedom of religion, they can't just shut down your church. They cannot block you from speaking, throttle your opinions, privilege some points of view against others. They can't use your tax dollars to rig the system for the ruling class. But in fact, that's exactly what happened. And it's a profound question where we have to ask ourselves, you know, how deep does the corruption go? How deep, how broad, how high? And what are we going to do about it? Now, I'm not here to give you the answers, but I do want to highlight one example of this that I think really illustrates just how bad things have gotten. Now, you are surely aware of the profound power of Big Pharma and its close relationship with the FDA. So the FDA is basically a captured regulatory institution. It's run by the same businesses it regulates. And with that comes all sorts of financial corruptions related to royalty sharing, the absence of indemnification, the presence of indemnification for the companies so that they're not held responsible for products that don't work. There's a cover-up when the products don't work and they get paid anyway. All of this has been going on, and it's most famously been illustrated with the COVID vaccine, which started being developed in January of 2020 and then was released in November, helpfully following the election that Donald Trump was said to lose so that he couldn't get credit for having developed it. And initially, all the claims were that it's safe and effective. Looking back, of course, you can't possibly have claimed that because we had no experience. It was an experimental technology for the most part, mRNA. And so there was no way to claim that it was safe and effective because we just didn't have the evidence really either way. It was the first trial run of an experimental drug. And yet, they claimed it anyway. And we were overwhelmed with propaganda from government, from media, from all the Hollywood stars and influencers. They all said, take a shot, take a shot. When people started resisting, the Biden administration imposed vaccine mandates. They tried to impose them on all businesses in America. That was rejected by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court did acquiesce to a mandate for healthcare facilities. And then we got the transportation mask mandates and many, many other things I don't need to go into now. But one particular approval really struck me at the time. It was for a drug coming out from Pfizer, which was the leading manufacturer or distributor of the COVID-19 vaccine. It was called Paxlovid. And this was a drug said to be a great therapeutic for the people who are suffering from COVID-19. And at the time, it was the drug of choice. Whether you're vaccinated or not, if you got COVID, which is a strange thing, I mean, they initially called them breakout cases. Later, it turned out that the vaccine didn't help at all, apparently, in stopping transmission or infection. So when you got COVID, you were supposed to take this drug called Paxlovid, which was approved in December of 2021 and distributed around the country. And the federal government, over time, applied $11 billion or more to buying doses of it to make sure it was widely distributed, all in an effort to end the pandemic. Now, early on, there seemed to be problems with it because everybody who took it, but not everybody, but vast numbers of people who took it got COVID again. So they initially, they'd feel better, and then the COVID would bounce back. And so this started being reported in the independent press as a typical thing that would happen with Paxlovid, that you would get COVID again, that you would relapse. And this happened to Biden and Biden's wife and to Fauci and so many people. And this is despite the fact that Biden, among, you know, and Fauci and everybody else, was claiming this thing to be 89, 90% effective, because that's what Pfizer was claiming. Well, a very interesting article just appeared in April of 2024 in the New England Journal of Medicine. And this article reports on a study done by Pfizer itself at the height of the Delta variant, which is really early on in the pandemic. So maybe the study was done two and a half years ago. Not entirely clear on when it was done, but they held their results. And so what were the results? Well, they took several hundred people and with COVID and gave them Paxlovid and another several hundred people, and they gave them a placebo. And the researchers, all of whom were associated with Pfizer, doing a study paid for by Pfizer, concludes in this study published in the New England Journal of Medicine that there was no difference at all between the people who took the drug and those who took the placebo. And the study is very blunt and very blatant about this. They say that they cannot find, based on the data they're looking at, any usefulness to the drug at all, which is to say that Paxlovid turns out to be completely useless based on the science that we have. Oh, that's interesting, because we've gone through 3 years, 2.5 years of propaganda about how glorious this is. In many communities in the United States, people were driving, you know, a long way to get this drug when you get COVID. Oh, we've got to have some Paxlovid. That's the answer to everything. The drug was very expensive, actually, despite the federal subsidies. It was about $1,350 to take this patented medication. But people took it because they were scared of COVID. Well, it turns out, in retrospect, the thing didn't, apparently, based on the evidence we have, achieve anything at all. There's no better than a placebo. So now what happens? Well, the study came out. Where was it reported? Somebody sent it to me. I looked at it. I was amazed. It had the clinical name of the drug, Paxlovid, in the title, but you can't find it by searching. So I reported on it, and the Epoch Times reported on it. And actually, Epoch Times has been running articles about this fake therapeutic for 2.5 years since it was first released, and it's been uncannily accurate. But where was the New York Times? Where's the Wall Street Journal? Where's Bloomberg? Where's the AP? Where's the rest of the legacy media on this? I haven't seen a single story on this topic at all. So a drug that was supposed to be this wonderful therapeutic turns out to be entirely useless, as admitted by the manufacturer in a leading medical journal. And there's no headlines, unlike all the headlines that were proclaiming that it worked. Now, you have to wonder about this. Again, how high does the corruption really go? Is this just a pure accident? People used to be interested in it, now they're not interested anymore? I don't think so. Pfizer made billions and billions of dollars. How much does it cost to manufacture Paxlovid, honestly? I mean, just a few bucks, and yet they're making $1,350 from it to pay for their patents and the regulatory costs and whatever else. It doesn't work, and not a peep from the mainstream media about it. To me, this really hit me in my gut. A lot of people are really exercised by the failure of the vaccine to stop transmission, to stop infection, and the vaccine injuries that resulted, which are inordinately high, and death. But for some reason, this Paxlovid case really hit me, because, in part because, during this entire period when this drug was proclaimed as the answer to COVID, at the same time, regulators and pharmacies and doctors and medical associations were putting down and disparaging the main antivirals and therapeutics that we've usually used to deal with respiratory illnesses, namely hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and then other things like vitamin D from sunshine and zinc and other known solutions that are out of patent. Those were almost impossible to get by design. CVS, Walgreens, they were not filling prescriptions. Most pharmacies weren't. They were afraid to fill them. The FDA put out a tweet that said, oh, you're not a horse. You're not an animal. Don't take ivermectin. Well, how many people died as a result of this? We don't actually know. And there's no accountability for this at all. So you've got a regulatory apparatus that puts down known workable therapeutics on one hand and makes them, in many places, impossible to get. In many places, some places you could get it, but very, very difficult to get in the middle of a pandemic, while promoting a drug that is proven by the manufacturer in a study funded by the manufacturer to be completely useless. All of this happens, and we don't hear a word about it from the press. Amazing. And then you look at the ivermectin case in particular. There was a lawsuit that was advanced by a doctor in Houston, very expensive lawsuit that went all the way through the courts and was finally settled before trial, with the FDA agreeing to take down its most viral tweet in history, the one that said, you're not a horse, don't take ivermectin. They agreed to take that down. So that's what they consider justice, taking down a tweet. It's basically an admission that they were wrong. The FDA is not supposed to be giving advice on therapeutics. They're supposed to be just there to approve drugs as safe and effective. Instead, they're acting like a doctor, while meanwhile taking away from doctors the right to practice medicine and the ability to get their prescriptions filled by mainstream pharmacies. Now, I know this is maybe it's a relatively small point, but it points to a much bigger problem we have in medicine, for sure, but in media, in technology. A lot of what I've told you on this film, you were not allowed to say. If I said this on Facebook, my account could be deleted. Certainly my post would be throttled, wouldn't reach a group. If I was saying this in a group chat, that group chat could be deleted. And that frequently happened all throughout the pandemic period. I guess my point is that we've learned some terrible things over the last several years about American institutions. It's not that we have a few bad eggs, we just clean them up. If we go to the right courts, then everything will be fine. We're way past that. The corruption does indeed go to the top, and there's no real appeal past that. This came home to me really clearly recently in a Supreme Court oral arguments over the injunction related to the free speech cases in a case called Murthy versus Missouri. Listening to the oral arguments, it seemed clear that the court is divided in three ways. One third of them don't believe in free speech. That seemed clear. One third seemed to be confused on exactly what is the role of government in regulating our speech. And then one third were all for the First Amendment. Well, we have the Supreme Court divided three ways. You know, we don't know how this case is going to turn out. We're going to find out in a few months from now, by the end of the summer probably, but we don't know. So we can't even depend, really, on the Supreme Court to defend our rights. What is the answer? Well, I wish I had the answer. I'm just presenting to you that we face a difficult problem, one that is more profound and more substantial and more confounding than any problem we've had in the post-war period. We realize now that the corruption is very wide, very deep, and goes all the way to the top. The good news is that you can hear about it, that I can talk about it, that you can watch the show. We still have some venues that allow us to speak. Not a lot, but they're still there. And I suggest to you, my friends, that so long as we're allowed to speak, as long as we're allowed to read the truth and report the truth, we should do that. Because I believe not only is that the only path to winning this struggle for our rights and our freedoms, it's the only path we have, but I think it is the most effective path. Truth is a beautiful disinfectant. And that, I believe, is the way we can win this. Thank you for listening. Always remember, put freedom first. I'm Jeffrey Tucker.